The ad about Congressman Carroll Hubbard, Jr., a five-term Democrat from Western Kentucky, was placed in four local newspapers by Philip Stern. Stern is a writer, a liberal activist, and philanthropist, and he's heir to a Sears Roebuck fortune. So far this election year, his organization, Citizens Against PACs, has taken on 10 congressmen. Righted Representative Martin Frost helped the dairy lobby milk his constituents. What is Representative Henson Moore going to do with $467,000 in leftover campaign money? Take it with him? Who does Representative Mickey Edwards care more about? You and your vote, or the auto dealers and their money? One of the ads took on the powerful chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, Dan Rostenkowski of Chicago.
And our ad said, what is Congressman Rostenkowski going to do with $500,000 of leftover campaign money? Take it with him? He is safely ensconced in a heavily Democratic district, has not gotten less than 80% of the vote since 1974. Starts out with $224,000 in the bank, safe district. Nonetheless, he raises another $500,000.
Congressman Rostenkowski oversees the writing of tax legislation, and that's of major interest to PACs. He declined to be interviewed by 60 Minutes, but in early 1982, he told CBS News,
the PACs that are making those contributions are aware that by that contribution doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to support their position. I don't discourage the rendering of a campaign contribution, but there's no commitment.
Those who tell you it has no effect at all are asking you to believe that somehow we've discovered a race of people who can regularly accept large amounts of money from perfect strangers for very important reasons and then be totally unaffected by it in their behavior.
Congressman Barney Frank, an incumbent Democrat, found himself running against an incumbent Republican when two congressional districts were combined in Massachusetts. In the 1982 election, he raised and spent more money than anyone else in his race for Congress.
I raised $1.5 million. My opponent raised about $1 million.
About $225,000 of Frank's money came from PACs.
I don't think it's a corrupt system, but it's a distorted system. Some people will say, well, they don't buy my vote, they buy access. But time is our scarcest commodity. If you have bought 20 minutes with a committee chairman or a powerful member, that's very valuable.
The more money a congressman gets from PACs, the more likely he is to be a subject of one of Stern's ads. House Republican leader Robert Michael of Illinois was a target.
And our headline was, why did the Ocean Spray Cranberry Pack give $2,000 to Congressman Michael? He got more than two-thirds of his 1982 campaign money, not from the voters of his district, but from groups outside his district who had only a remote interest in the welfare of Peoria, Illinois.
The Michael campaign contended that the list of PACs which contributed to that campaign is so large and so varied as to make charges of influence peddling laughable.
I think that answer is laughable. If any one of those lobbyists comes in and says, remember me, I gave you $2,000, Michael will remember him.
Michael's campaign chairman said that your ads go way too far, that they're something just short of pure political character assassination. Your response?
If Congressman Michael presents the inference that is being drawn from those facts, let him change the system. The Congress made these laws and they can change them.
Stern believes that Congress must be made uncomfortable before it will reform itself. And he is relentlessly bipartisan in his targets for embarrassment. For example, Liberal Democrat Jeff Bingaman, freshman senator from New Mexico.
The headline was, why did Senator Bingaman allow the doctor's lobby to butter its bread on both sides?
The American Medical Association had given Bingaman's conservative Republican opponent $7,500. But the opponent lost. And after the election, on December 29, 1982,
the AMA reached into its little black bag, and lo and behold, it found $10,000 it wanted to give to Jeff Bingaman, and did.
Senator Bingaman said in a letter to one of your board members, the allegation that the AMA or any other organization which has contributed to my campaign has first claim on my ear is false and offensive. Now, did you go too far in your assertions?
No, sir. We said to him, if you want to disabuse the AMA and your voters of any such idea, send the money back. And his response, I can't afford to. If he can't afford to do without AMA money now, 5 years before his next re-election, how is he going to fend off the blandishments of those, of the AMA and other PACs when he is in the heat of his next re-election campaign?
This law... Philip Stern worked for passage of the 1974 federal election law that brought public financing, contribution limits, and spending ceilings to presidential elections. He'd like to see the same rules applied to congressional elections, and he'd like to eliminate PACs, the loophole created by the 1974 law. Then, reform was aided by the scandal of Watergate. Now he feels there is only scandal waiting to happen. Stern hopes his ads will get constituents angry enough to ask embarrassing questions of their congressman and begin the process of campaign finance reform. Not only outsiders, do-gooders, idealists, and gadflies like Citizens Against PACs are concerned about the large amount of special interest PAC money in congressional campaigns. Widely respected members of Congress, like Representative Barbara Conable, the ranking Republican member of the Ways and Means Committee, also see the danger.
I think the public has a right to be worried about it. My impression is that that even the perception that Congress is being bought is dangerous.
Congressman Conable, who is retiring after 20 years of representing the voters of Rochester, New York, has had a policy of accepting no more than $50 from any source other than the party itself.
It's meant something to the people I've represented because they felt that I couldn't very well be bought for $50.
Sometimes congressmen seem to want to be seduced.
Well, it's not a matter of their being seduced so much as they feel to be safe, they've got to have large sums of money to spend on media advertising to defend their incumbency.
It's incumbents who make the election rules, and they rake in the PAC money, 3.5 times more than the challengers. Bill Allwell knows this. He directs the PAC of the largest union in the AFL-CIO. This election, here's United Food and Commercial Workers, will give close to $2 million to candidates. About 75% of it will go to incumbents.
If you go back over 40 years, 92% of all incumbents that run for re-election are re-elected.
Are you, as a man who has to live with it, satisfied with the system?
Absolutely not. I think it's a crazy system. I think we ought to really sit down and rethink what we're doing to American politics.
Bill Orwell's dissatisfaction with the influence of money in politics is shared by Ned Cabot, who directs the PAC of the Equitable Life Insurance Company.
The life insurance PAC doesn't represent my interests as a father, a resident of a city, somebody who's interested in the environment, lives near the water. It doesn't represent any of those things. It does what it's supposed to do, represent a single interest.
Cabot believes the general interest gets short shrift in a system where it's hard to run for Congress without PAC money.
Well, I'm old enough to remember the time when a young fellow, friends of mine, could get together with their friends and family and business associates and raise enough money to run for Congress. In 1982, the average winner of a contested race, that is those in one in which the winner won by less than 55% of the vote, had to raise $361,000 to get elected to the Congress of the United States.
Richard Armstrong is the president of the Public Affairs Council, the professional organization of corporate public affairs executives. The council has defended PACs, but also has sponsored meetings at which business PAC directors have discussed ethical guidelines for corporate PAC giving.
The stickiest kinds of questions are things like, should you give money to a candidate who doesn't really need it?
Armstrong thinks Congress should reform some of its worst practices, like the use of excess campaign funds.
It's shocking the use that they're making of these. They're allowed to put it in their office account. They're supposed to declare it as income. They are not declaring it as income. And they're going ahead and using it. Senator Cranston took singing lessons. Dole decorated his office with some of these funds. D'Amato bought a couple of cars, that type of thing. So I think it might make some sense. I'm speaking for myself. That at the end of a campaign, if they've got some money left, that they give it to the party or give it back to the contributors or give it to the Red Cross or something like that.
For the record, Senator Cranston hired a voice coach, but not for singing lessons. Senator Dole commissioned an efficiency study of his office rather than redecorated it, though others in Congress have used excess funds for redecorating. And Senator D'Amato leased cars instead of buying them But he didn't use his own excess funds. He had his bills paid for him by the National Republican Senatorial Committee, one of the biggest PACs. All year long, at places in Washington like the Capitol Hill Club, incumbents go after PAC money by giving cocktail parties. They're like charity fundraisers, with tickets ranging from $250 to $1,000, except that the charity is the incumbent's re-election campaign. In his district, a congressman might charge $50, $25, or as little as $10 for voters to attend a similar function. If you receive a few such invitations in the mail, the head of a small PAC receives a box full, and not the ones for $10.
Congressman and Mrs. Doug Walgren invite you to join them for a party of early risers. That's for breakfast, 8 to 10 a.m. in Washington, $250 per person. Congressman Alan Wheat and some Democrats this time, that's $250. That seemed to be fairly standard. Senator Howard Baker and Senator Richard Lugar are hosting this one in honor of John M. Burris of Delaware, who's a candidate, $500 per person.
It does constitute, in my way of thinking anyway, a serious abuse, potentially, since the very people most affected by the work of the committee are the ones who come to those cocktail parties, feel they have to maintain the goodwill of the congressman.
Congressman Jim Leach, Republican of Iowa, now in his fourth term in Congress, has never accepted PAC money, a practice only a few of his colleagues have followed.
Who represents poor people when you have a system in which money is the primary influence peddler? In the last few major Senate elections, Eastern Unions, Western oil interests have pumped spectacular sums of money into my state. But we're a small business, we're a rural state, we're a farm state. And in Iowa, it's nuts to have candidates indebted to Eastern Unions or, for that matter, Texas oil.
If you're a challenger and the money isn't dumped in your lap, you go after it. Congressman Leach told us how candidates do it. They go to K Street Northwest in Washington, where so many PACs are located, it's sometimes called PAC Street.
They say, I'd like money from your group. That group generally gives them, by the way, a questionnaire to fill out. Is their name, their address, what they're running for. Then it says, how do you stand on issues? And the issues aren't abstract. They're not, do you support a balanced budget? Do you support a strong national defense? They are, do you favor a tax cut for this industry? Do you favor spending for that program? And then, depending on how you vote, or how you filled out the application, you get money.
Congressman Leach has co-sponsored legislation to limit the total amount of money that a candidate can receive from all PACs to $90,000.
Do you have any indication that your colleagues are getting more concerned about all of this?
Privately, many say there's a huge problem. Publicly, they throw up their hands and say there's nothing they can do about it. You present a bill, for example, on changing the system, and they'll say, well, maybe we'll consider it next time, but I don't want to co-sponsor it because that'll hurt my campaign contributions in the next election.